Hare Krishna, good morning. Reading from the fourth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 28, Paranjan becomes a woman in the next life. Verse number 24. Purim vyahayo bhagata viparado bhujangama Yadatame vanupuri Visirna prakritim gata. Translation by His Divine Grace. The serpent, who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavana Raja and was out of the city, began to follow his master along with the others. As soon as they all left the city, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. Purport by His Divine Grace. When the living entity is arrested, all his followers, namely the life air, the senses, and the sense objects, immediately leave the lump of matter, the body. When the living entity and his companions leave, the body no longer works, but turns into basic material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. When a city attacked by enemies is vacated by its inhabitants, the enemy immediately takes advantage of that city and bombards it to smash the whole thing to dust. When we say, dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return, we refer to the body. When a city is attacked and bombarded by enemies, the citizens generally leave and the city ceases to exist. It is a foolish person who engages in improving the condition of a city without caring for the citizens or inhabitants. Similarly, a living entity who is not properly enlightened in spiritual knowledge simply take care of the eternal external of the external body, not knowing that the spirit soul is the principal factor within the body. When one is advanced in spiritual knowledge, the spirit soul is saved from eternal transmigration. The Bhagavatam considers those who are attached to their bodies to be like cows and asses, saeva go kara. The cow is a very innocent animal, and the ass is a beast of burden. One who labors under the bodily conception simply works like an ass and does not know his self-interest. It is therefore said, Yasatma buddhi kanapi tri datuke swadi kala tridishu boma ijadi yat tirtha buddhi salele na karachij saneshu abhineshu saeva gokara. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with himself, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is considered to be like an ass or a cow. Bhagavatam 10:84-13. Human civilization devoid of Krishna consciousness is simply a civilization of lower animals. Sometimes a civilization may study the dead body and consider the brain or the heart. However, no part of the body is important unless the spirit soul is present. In a modern civilization of cows and asses, scientists try to search out some value in the brain are the heart of a dead man. So we repeat, the serpent who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavana Raja was out of the city, began to follow his master along with the others. As soon as they all left the city, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O nectar churned from the ocean of all Vedic scriptures, O most prominent transcendental fruit of all the Vedas, O you, who are enriched with the jewels of all spiritual philosophical conclusions, O you, who grant spiritual vision to all people of the world, O life breath of the Vaishnava devotees, O Lord, you are the sun which has arisen to dispel the darkness of Kali Yuga. You are actually Lord Krishna who has returned among us. So, so in following this incredible narration, sorry, I have to put my leg down because I have a cramp in my feet. In following this incredible narration, each one of us can, to some degree or to a large extent, identify with the unfortunate victim, Paranjan. Srila Prabhupada's purports are loyal to Vaishnava tradition and scriptural commentary. And one of Srila Prabhupada's unique, unprecedented accomplishments was that he translated the Srimad Bhagavatam following the orders of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, to print books. So to print books, you have to have some books to print. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada took this amazing journey into translating the Srimad Bhagavatam as his first effort. Srila Prabhupada at various times commented that he also wanted his disciples to write and publish books. That one time when we were in Mayapur visiting the Sri Chaitanya Math, he commented that he noticed that the shelf of the Math was only featuring the books of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So he commented that the preaching was dead because the followers of Bhakti Siddhanta's disciples, they were not writing, they were not producing literature, indicating that they were not gaining realizations. So it is wonderful to note that Srila Prabhupada's disciples have taken this instruction to heart, and there are many wonderful volumes of literature based on their wonderful realizations that are coming from the purports and teachings of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada left off where Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he picked up where Srila Bhakti Siddhanta had left off. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta had given a general instruction that all of his disciples should go and preach, and specifically go and preach in the English language, meaning go abroad. And he also prepared some of his disciples for that particular duty. And in preparing them to depart, to go to the West, he waited until there was an English book, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, written by Professor Sanyal, who was his initiated disciple known as Narayan, and given the honorific Bhakti Sudhakara. He often worked very closely with this personality. So when this book, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, was completed, then he handed it over to his disciples that now you may go and preach in the West. Because what is preaching if you're just simply speaking and you don't have something to give, something to back you up, something to put into their hands? He used to admonish us, that's okay, you can talk, you can stand on any preach corner, on any street corner and preach. But unless you give them something, give them a book, they will forget in 5 or 10 minutes. So Srila Prabhupada took this order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta very seriously. He also did not depart to America until he had completed the first volume in 3 parts of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that was basically the only possession, other than a few cloth and some little bag of dal, and, you know, I think he had some potatoes. His main possession was a trunk full of the Srimad Bhagavatams. You know, when we go traveling, I don't know about you, but we always have a big, I always have like at least one big suitcase full of I don't know what, you know. And I have another one full of books, but now we have these wonderful things, like I have this iPad and all the books are on there. It's on this one little tiny thing. You can just have all the Srila Prabhupada's books. The Srila Prabhupada had the authentic hard copy versions in one trunk. And it's significant that his first published work was the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in doing this, he established the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. He also made Srimad Bhagavatam the cornerstone, the foundation of his morning program. So that in Sri Sri Gornitai Jai, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radhe Sham, goodbye. So that in practically every temple around the world, there is every morning a Srimad Bhagavatam class, a discourse in the topics of Lord Krishna, his pastimes and activities. So his success, his huge success, it wasn't just a little success, but Srila Prabhupada had a huge success after the age of 69. About maybe 2 or 3 years ago, Time magazine had a article published that 50 of the most prominent persons in the world who attained success after the age of 50. And number 5 on the list was Srila Prabhupada. You know, so Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So he, in less than 12 years, he was founding an international organization, an international spiritual organization. He was organizing it, developing it. You know, this incredible movement. Even though we're international, on one level, that sounds very grand, but on another level, we're still actually relatively small. You know, it's like sometimes I'm laughing because I travel a lot, and everywhere I go, inevitably I'm going to see somebody I know from, you know, from my country or the place I just was, you know, that our family circle is still relatively small, even though we're expanding like anything, which tells us that we still have a little work to do for Srila Prabhupada. But he was able to establish the foundations of this movement. And in doing so, he never accepted any praise on his own behalf. He would deflect that praise and say, I'm just serving the previous acharyas. I'm just following the instructions of my spiritual master. He wanted to be recognized for his unadulterated allegiance to the previous acharyas. And he wanted to be recognized as standing firm in that line of disciplic succession. He would say, if I have done anything wonderful, it is that I have faithfully followed the instructions of my spiritual master and I have not changed anything. At another time he said, I don't claim to be a pure devotee or even perfect, but my only qualification is that I'm trying to follow the instructions of the perfect. So this was Srila Prabhupada's perfection and humility. So there are many false saints, people who are purported to be saints. Sometimes we see their big banners with their smiling faces along the road here and at other places. So they allow their followers or their disciples to advertise them as saints. You know, they kind of pump them up. But it's understood by the Vaishnavacharyas, the orthodox Vaishnavacharyas, that a great person or a saint can only be understood by one who is equal to themselves. So in other words, if someone Like you have your little followers and they're, you know, Jai Guru Dev, you're a saint, you're a saint. That's very nice, it's very flattering. But coming from those who are beneath you, who are not spiritually realized, it really has not a value. It's just like a kid will say, you know, my dad is the best dad, my dad's better than all the other dads. And, you know, for that kid it's a fact, but it may not be a reality outside their home, you see. So Srila Prabhupada was established by not only his disciples, we are naturally going to see him in a very elevated manner, but by other elevated Vaishnavas, by elevated persons who could understand that Srila Prabhupada came here not on his own accord, but that he was sent by Lord Krishna to carry on the Sankirtan movement. In this way, he is known as Shaktavesh Avatar, one who is specifically empowered by the Supreme Lord to carry out a specific activity or a specific performance. So Srila Prabhupada's purports, therefore, are imbibed with the previous acharyas, that many times he will quote Sridhara Swami or Vishwanath Chakravarti, Narottam Das. He will elaborate on their commentaries, and he will give some of his realization based upon these same commentaries. But he doesn't ever say, well, I think, or it is my opinion that. Everything is coming directly in line of disciplic succession, and he wanted his authority to be accepted according to how faithfully he lived up to this standard. So then in establishing ISKCON, we became part of the Gaudiya school, the Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya, that was founded by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Bengal over five centuries ago. And then we are officially connected with the 13th century Vaishnav school of Madhava and with the even older Sri Vaishnavas founded by Ramanuja Acharya. So it's a very authentic line. We're very authentically situated. It's not something that Srila Prabhupada just suddenly came to America and created something, but he adhered very strictly to the authority of the previous acharyas. Now, can be noted that founders of various Vaishnav schools or sects have written major commentaries on Vyasadeva's Vedanta Sutra. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he proposed that the ancient Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, in itself was commentary, that there was no need for further commentary. So as such, he was not encouraging his followers to write further commentary, that he advised there was no need for commentary or sub-commentaries. And this was supported by a verse from the Garuda Purana, that said that this is a quote from the Garuda Purana. This Purana is perfectly complete. It is the support of the Vedanta Sutra, and it establishes the meaning of the Mahabharat. It is a commentary on Gayatri. It completes the message of the Vedas. It is the Shamaveda among the Puranas, and it is directly spoken by an incarnation of God, Veda Vyas. So this work, consisting of 12 cantos, hundreds of chapters, and 18,000 verses, is called Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Srila Prabhupada was himself firmly convinced of the relevance of the Srimad Bhagavatam for all men, for all times. And it is like a perennial, eternal spiritual science of God consciousness. And he felt he took his responsibility very seriously to simply translate without distortion. And in doing so, remaining true to the instructions of the previous acharyas. So sometimes, it is essential that the lofty ideas and images in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's seen that there's very lofty images, very esoteric teachings and ideas. And Srila Prabhupada attempted to convey this in his purports in an understandable way. so that the readers, the modern readers, could comprehend and assimilate the instructions, and in doing this, without changing or adulterating anything. The original texts are messages from a different time, an ancient time, and a foreign time for us. And Srila Prabhupada felt an urgency to deliver these messages, and that urgency was imbibed into his early disciples, that we each felt such an urgency that we have to assist our spiritual master. On my very first morning class in 1967, this was the day after his arrival in San Francisco in January, he gave the first Srimad Bhagavatam class. And then he ended it by telling us, who had just met him the day before, to go out and preach, to give this message to others. And every day he would say that. Finally we said, how are we going to do this? You know, it was such an amazing, we were hearing such amazing things, you know, that we had never heard of or considered. Or we were hearing answers to questions that we had never been able to have answered before. And we were feeling just overwhelmed by this incredible knowledge that was coming to us. But we had no capacity to transmit this knowledge to others. At least we didn't think we did. But Srila Prabhupada said, you simply listen to what I speak and then you repeat. Don't change anything. And as you gain realization, then you can say something. So the two instructions are there. First, simply repeat what you've heard from me. Don't change anything. And as you gain some personal realization, then you can speak. So we had this urgency, and it was put in at a very early time, from the beginning. And what is this urgency? That the whole world is going to hell, and we are going to hell with it for lack of spiritual knowledge, for lack of spiritual education. And as such, he was always concerned with how to make the Bhagavatam's instructions comprehensible to the average contemporary public. He felt that if even only a few people read the message, if only a few people, then he felt the endeavor would be successful. Although he wanted the whole world to benefit, he was satisfied if just someone would take it. Someone would take it to hand. Prior to his 1965 departure to the USA with the first three volumes, one could have questioned, well, why did he choose this Bhagavatam? It's such an esoteric, otherworldly work. It's not well known. Even in India, it isn't that, you know, the general public is not always aware of Bhagavatam. Of course, by Prabhupada's mercy, now they are very much aware on a greater scale. But at that time, it was more secular. So why didn't he go with something else that was maybe easier, more easily recognizable? But Srila Prabhupada didn't think like that. You know, he was always thinking on a grander scale just for the benefit of humanity. And he wasn't concerned that there wasn't an audience for the Srimad Bhagavatam. He created his own audience, his own readership, through transcendental marketing. He got these books printed. Now I have the books. What to do with them? They're sitting in a warehouse collecting dust. Go out and distribute these books. And legions of young men and women went out there on the street. We hit the pavement. We went out with these books and began, just like Lord Chaitanya told Nityananda and Haridas, to everyone you see, my dear sir, please take the holy name. So we were also in anyone, take this book, take this book. And in this way, there was a transcendental flood of spiritual knowledge. Even if people couldn't comprehend it, Prabhupada said, that's okay, simply by looking at it, simply by touching it, they'll benefit. And we've heard of people that have picked up the book, they brought it home, barely looked at it, put it on a shelf in their house, and 20 or 25 or even 30 years later, they came back to that same book, took it off the shelf, opened it up, and began to read it, and then became connected with ISKCON and Srila Prabhupada's devotees. It took some time. Prabhupada said, a valuable nut takes a long time to fructify. So certain things don't happen overnight, although they may appear to for some of us. So in a few years, he had almost 5,000 disciples who were serious students of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And millions more worldwide have brought the Srimad Bhagavatam into their homes in various languages, now over 123 languages. Last year, an amazing accomplishment was that the Chinese government, who controls all literature, nothing can be, you know, just like in the, we say, not a, we don't say, the Bhagavad Gita says, not a blade of grass moves without Krishna's sanction. So in China, not a book is printed without the sanction of the government. And the government sanctioned and has themselves arranged for the printing of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is being presented, of course, not as a religious text. Prabhupada said we're not a religious text. This is scientific knowledge. It's, you know, so it's being presented on a cultural basis, but it's the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they are so impressed that they've told Janava, who is the main translator and the driving force, her and her husband behind this, that anything she translates, they will publish it. This is the Chinese government. Just see the power of Srila Prabhupada and his faith in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a sign that Srila Prabhupada is a great author, that he created an audience where there was none. He was never concerned with the court of public opinion. Just like when he created, when he first established ISKCON, the people said, who were helping him, said, well, you know, Krishna consciousness, why don't you say God consciousness? You know, people that don't know Krishna. Prabhupada said, Krishna is God. And he insisted on Krishna consciousness. He wasn't concerned about the court of public opinion, which is coming from a lower realm. His duty, his mission, and therefore our mission, is to educate the public, to uplift them, to give them this transcendental knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada considered Srimad Bhagavatam, along with the Bhagavad Gita, as the substantial foundation of ISKCON. But it was Srimad Bhagavatam that was his opus magnum. It means his great work, a great literary masterpiece. And his commentaries and translations were based largely on the previous acharyas. He said, he explained one time that when somebody was saying, you know, you're writing so many wonderful things, he says, I am not writing. It is not me. I am only writing what Krishna wants me to write. And he was saying this in a very natural way. It was just a fact. And his commentaries are like illuminations, because if we just took the translation and read the translation, we'd still be bewildered. We might even be more bewildered. But his purports, his commentaries, are like an illumination on the deep words of the Bhagavatam. And then he introduced detailed illustrations, which he called pictures to the spiritual world, not to give us some diversion, but to give us deeper insight into the purports and meanings in his books. Srila Prabhupada always insisted on the literal understanding of the Bhagavatam, particularly in terms of Krishna's pastimes. But there are notable exceptions to this, and the narration that we're currently studying, this Paranjan and his life story, this is one of those exceptions, that it is a parable. It is like, you know, an allegory whereby we can learn something from this example. And of course, the whole thing came about because Narada Muni came upon this king who was in a miserable situation, and, you know, because of his attachment to his enjoying position and sense gratification, etc. And he knew if he told this king, look, here's what you're doing wrong. You're doing this, you're doing that. Nobody likes to be told, hey, you're wrong. You know, kind of, even if it's true, you just don't take it so, you don't really react so easily. So using his very specific and creative intelligence, Narada Muni was then speaking about another person, because obviously we all like to hear about somebody else, you know, nature of the living entity. So a little transcendental gossip went on, you know, about this other guy, which was really the king himself. So, you know, Narada Muni, he's an itinerant preacher, and he's seen throughout the pages of Bhagavatam. You know, sometimes you can say stirring the pot to get things going a little faster, or in this case, giving this wonderful instruction. So, Gopi Puranadana, he described Puranjan as the equivalent of every man. So in the European, the medieval European dramas and tragedies and plays, they would have an everyman that everyone in the, you know, the main character that everybody in the audience could identify with. So in this case, the everyman Puranjan, he is represented by the embodied soul who's suffering from his misidentification with the temporary material nature. And for years he's trying to enjoy, and he has capacity to make wonderful arrangements because he's the king, he's very wealthy. But even a pauper is proud of his penny, right? So even the poorest person, what to speak of everybody in between, will try to find some way to be comfortable. You know, I mean, we see this even in the animal kingdom. There was the other day on Prikrama, I saw one, just some pile of dirt and rubbish, and one dog had dug out a little hole, and he was happily sleeping in his little hole that he made in the dirt and rubbish. You know, he was snoozing away. And we do the same thing. We're living in a material world where everything is temporary. It may look pretty good to us, you know, materially speaking. I mean, certainly I prefer a neat, clean environment than some filthy, dirty environment. But ultimately, it's temporary, the clean environment or the dirty environment. You know, we wander around Vrindavan and we see so many contrasting situations, and we're trying to find one that looks comfortable. You know, this is the nature of the embodied soul. We're trying to find some comfortable situation. And for how long is it going to last? Well, as long as we can just squeeze out a little breath out of this deteriorating body. So this is what Puranjan is representing, this illusion living entity. Narada Muni is showing how this illusion was smashed finally when, at the time of death. And leading up to the time of death, one realizes sometimes, you know, if one is, it's actually a little fortunate if you know beforehand something's happening so you can prepare yourself, but you don't always get that opportunity. A few days ago, one godbrother, Kulishakar Prabhu, he had just returned to the Association of Devotees. He'd been living a little bit away for some time, and he relocated to Alachua. He'd been there about a month, and all of a sudden, bang, heart attack, he's gone. So no time to, you know, to prepare. Another devotee just a few days prior, Siddhavidya Prabhu. If any of you have ever been to Miami Temple, you'll know Siddhavidya. Siddhavidya gave his life to Prabhupada's movement in terms of book distribution and Harinam Sankirtan. And he never missed a day of Mangal Arti. Even at the last moment when he was in the hospital, hooked up on some life supports that they eventually removed, the devotees would come and chant the entire, particularly one devotee, Gaurasundar Prabhu, chant the entire morning program and read Bhagavatam. And Siddhavidya, although he couldn't even properly communicate, was fully aware and expressing his appreciation. One time, the temple board, for whatever reason, decided he had committed some kind of apara, whatever it was. It wasn't very serious. But they decided to ban him from the temple. Now, in this situation, banning him from the temple meant banning the only person who came to Mangal Arati besides the pujari and the deities. He would come every single morning, and I know this because I'm their GBC, so I was on a visit. So I was there in the temple standing alone. There was sit a vigil outside the window, attending Mangal Arati. Greeting of the deity, sit a vigil is outside the window, attending Mangal Arati, attending the greeting. Attending Guru Pooja, outside the window looking in. And then I realized, because I couldn't understand, like, how they could do this. And then I realized this was Krishna's arrangement just to show the character, the wonderful qualified character of Siddhavidya. That, never mind, I can't go in, doesn't matter, I'll be there. And every day, as long as he could walk, practically crawl, he was going out in Harinam Sankirtan. If nobody went with him, then he took his pair of kartals and he chanted and distributed Srila Prabhupada's books. So it was, and he actually came from a very wealthy family. It wasn't like he didn't have anywhere else to go or couldn't have had another life. But he surrendered to Srila Prabhupada and he surrendered to Harinam Sankirtan and book distribution. And he perfected his life in this way. So then, last Monday, surrounded by devotees who were chanting loudly at 4:49 in the afternoon, he took his final departure. So he had a little preparation time. He could prepare, but not everybody gets that opportunity. So Narada Muni was trying to give this king a little opportunity to prepare himself for the eventual reality, which is we're all going to leave this temporary encasement. We were hearing in some of the classes about some of the different aspects. And one of the classes was mentioned, I think Bhakti Sundar Maharaj was relating, as you are thinking of the time of death, of course, then you can get this next time of body. So then here was Paranjan being warned, that too much attached to a woman, your wonderful wife, you'll become a woman in your next life. And as you'll see in the next verse, guess what? There he was, a woman. But in his class, he was mentioning how Prabhupada was speaking, and he said, so if you're, as you were thinking of the time of death, you'll become in your next life. So if you're thinking of a dog, you can become a dog in your next life. Somebody after the class, they raised their hand, they said, well, I don't think it's such a bad thing to become a dog. And Prabhupada said, so you have my blessings, But really, would we want to do that? I mean, we are spirit soul, dog is spirit soul, but look what the dog has to go through. And we're also going through it, but just on another dimension. Unless we actually separate ourselves from the animal mentality and realize the full human potential, which is to understand ourselves as a spiritual spark, servant of the Supreme Lord. And this is a message that is trying to be imparted to Paranjan. And now he's left his body, and all of his followers, the air, the life air, the senses and the sense objects, they are following. Because what's the use of this body when there's no life air, when the soul is departed? As beautiful as the body is, nobody wants to embrace you when you're dead. It's fit for the dogs, for the vultures. So then Prabhupada comments, it is a foolish person who engages in improving the conditions of a city without caring for the citizens or inhabitants. So I was considering that. This is the leading sentence in the second paragraph. So the foolish person engages in improving the conditions of a city without caring for the citizens or the inhabitants. So in the same way, as caretakers of Srila Prabhupada's movement, we have to care not only for our buildings, but for those devotees, for those persons who come into the buildings. In the past, we've been a little remiss in this way, but now devotees are understanding how valuable the devotees are. Just like the life air is valuable, it keeps the body moving. And in the same way, our temples are alive because of the presence of the devotees who come to worship Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar. So similarly, Prabhupada says, a living entity who is not properly enlightened in spiritual knowledge simply takes care of the external body, not knowing that the spirit soul is the principal factor within the body. So this is the message we're meant to be taking deeply and giving out to others, the message of the Bhagavatam. So by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we've received this message, and now we also can take further mercy of Srila Prabhupada by continuing to assist him in disseminating the message. The other day, one of the speakers was mentioning about finishing things up in this life. And then he was indicating that the reason we're here now is because I forget the exact word he used, but basically we didn't finish things up in our previous life. And actually that's a fact. Srila Prabhupada said, all of us previously were associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, but we didn't finish our business. So I wanted to end with a quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. It was in a letter he wrote. And he said, when the independent living entities commit offenses at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, they degrade themselves. You should all constantly chant the holy names of Krishna. Study the devotional literatures without any offenses. Let many people become happy just by seeing our lifestyle. Just because a devotee has fallen into the hands of Maya does not mean we will give up our service to Lord Hari. But sometimes it will, you know, we'll like point to another fallen person, well, just see. Well, then why not me? But no, just because a devotee has fallen into the hands of Maya does not mean we will give up our service to Lord Hari. In some future lifetime, that fallen devotee will achieve benefit, though there may not be any hope for him in this life. Such devotees may even leave us in a cruel manner. Do not become afraid by seeing this type of misfortune. Foolish people will criticize us for all these fall downs. Nonetheless, you should fearlessly chant the holy names of Hari and thereby pass the test of Maya. Even if you lack faith, go on constantly chanting the holy names with utmost care. Well, this is a message of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, because sometimes we do feel a little, maybe we feel a little like discouraged or not so enthusiastic. We have some doubts. Our faith is not maybe as strong as it could be. But therefore, he says, even if you lack faith, go on constantly chanting the holy names with utmost care. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. It's 9 o'clock, so that is the end. So if there's a quick question, otherwise I'm leaving today, so please bless me that I can do some service when I get back to my country, USA. Hare Krishna.